So, some time ago, a senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada named Ranshaw from England brought out a Gita, and it's an interesting Gita. It's Prabhupada's Gita. But what he did is he divided up the verses and put like a heading above it with a theme, right? So he identified groups of verses with a theme, and he also like gave titles to the chapters that were a little more contemporary. So I thought it's another approach to the same knowledge. So chapter 12, The Way of Devotion. The path of personal devotion and the path of impersonal meditation both lead to Krishna, who rescues his devotees from the ocean of birth and death. He recommends the path of personal devotion and describes the qualities of those who are dear to him. Verse number 1. Arjuna said, "Some always serve you in devotion, and others contemplate the imperishable and imperceptible. Which are the most perfect in yoga?" 2. The Blessed Lord said, Those whose minds are focused on me, absorbed in my constant service with great faith, I consider the most perfect yogis. 3 and 4. Those who contemplate the imperceptible, the invisible, all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, who control the senses, are even-minded, and live for the welfare of all, also attain me. 5. Yet their trouble is great, for the path to the imperceptible is difficult for mortals to follow. 6 and 7. Those who dedicate all their actions to me, who are attached to me and absorbed in yoga, who remember and worship me, whose minds are fixed on me, I soon deliver from the ocean of birth and death. And then some comments. 2 spiritual paths are followed by practitioner of yoga: the path of devotion, the path of impersonal contemplation. Ultimately, both paths reach the same goal, but Krishna says at the end of the 6th chapter that one who faithfully serves him with devotion is the greatest yogi. Now Arjuna asks about those who are attracted to the all-pervading impersonal aspect of God. Well, it carries on, and I'll skip a little. Then it describes stages on the path. So maybe in this assembly we are not thinking that impersonalism is so much an issue. But impersonalism is that state of consciousness where we withdraw from service, where we are actually avoiding service to Krishna. It is the state where service to Krishna dies. So that appeals to us a little bit, because who likes to serve? It's not easy to truly be a servant. So therefore, once when Kirtanananda brought up this point to Srila Prabhupada and said that, "Why are you always preaching about the impersonalists? We are here in the Western world. Maybe in India it's relevant, but not in the Western world. Here it's, why not preach against atheism?" And Prabhupada said, "You're saying that because you're an impersonalist." So, talking about we are, so when we speak about impersonalist, we have to understand that we are actually lacking in personal dealings, lacking in being alert, awake. Sometimes it's said, "You are dull." Yeah? Prabhupada used to say, "Dull." Yeah? Dull brain, dull witted, dull. Stages on the path. Fix your mind on me. Absorb your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. If you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then try to reach me to regular practice of yoga. If you cannot do this regular practice, then devote yourself to working for me. For just by working for my sake, you will achieve perfection. If you're unable to work under my shelter, then control your mind and work without attachment to the fruits of your action. Knowledge is better than practice. Meditation is better than knowledge, and giving up the fruits of action is better than meditation. For from detachment comes peace. We find that we cannot not rise to the platform of pure devotional service. It's not within our reach. We hear about it, but it's not our mind, our senses are reluctant. Fix the mind on Krishna, all right? Absorb the intelligence in Krishna. That's all right, but how to do that? Therefore, okay, maybe the next verse is for us, because we cannot always fix the mind on Krishna. So maybe this one's for us. If you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then try to reach me by regular practice of yoga. Okay, so regular practice of yoga means connecting things with Krishna. So make a constant and make a conscious endeavor to connect with Krishna. That is basically yoga. Bhakti yoga. Then teaches us that we can connect the material energy with Krishna. And we can try to engage the gross material energy in the service of Krishna. However, the gross material energy in itself is perplexing by nature. It is always difficult to work with the gross material energy because it's unreliable. Anything can happen at any moment. That's just the nature of the gross material energy. One can try then a more subtle approach. One can try and absorb the mind, engage the mind in connection to Krishna. We cannot fix the mind, but we can keep the mind engaged. That works. For example, we can sing for a while, and then we can hear for a while, we can watch a movie, different ways, and keep the mind engaged with a lot of variety. We can go, then you can go on a japa walk, and then, you know, draw some devotional paintings or drawings. Just Parthasarathy, my disciple, who you may know, has now become an artist. And he's doing a painting a day because he's very fast in whatever he does. So now it's a painting a day. I'm getting one every day. And the last one I got was like a devotee lying flat on the floor in front of another devotee. And I had a feeling, and he sent it to me. So I thought, well, maybe he's the one on the floor, and maybe I'm the one. Possibly. It was nice. A drawing offering obeisances. So, in this way, we can stay engaged, keep the mind connected to Krishna. So it's not that we have to just fix that mind on Krishna and just keep it there. No, it's just, that would be very painful and not possible. But just, the mind goes here and there, but just engage it then in various ways. No problem. So that is the art, to somehow or other keep that mind engaged. Although it's restless, all right, change the activity, but engage the mind in another way. Read a little while, okay, tired of reading now, no problem. Put on some music. tired of that, or I try something else. In this way, maybe go to the temple, or like that. It's not difficult. It's Krishna consciousness in that way allows for the change in mind. That's yoga. The yoga simply means to bring Krishna in, whatever we do. Yeah, if you cannot fix the mind upon Krishna, or if you cannot engage in yoga, if you cannot do this regular practice or follow the regulations, that's the next thing. If you cannot follow some sort of discipline, because we are not used to discipline. We didn't grow up with that much discipline, and sort of disciplining the mind is very difficult. Disciplining the senses is very difficult. Kind of not used to that. So then what do you do? Well, then just work. Because working is something that controls our mind and senses. It's very powerful. As soon as we start working with the material energy, then that absorbs us, it forces us to do so many things, and time flies by, and suddenly the mind and senses have been controlled like that. That's why through working for Krishna, Janivas, there's a thermos flask behind you which looks like he wants you to have some tea. So Krishna is giving different options. If we cannot fix the mind, then at least work, do something for Krishna, something practical. Then Krishna is very liberal. Krishna even says in the next verse, if you're unable to work for me, then control your mind and work without attachment to the fruit of actions. All right, so then just be detached. If you cannot be Krishna conscious, then at least be detached from the material world. So that's already a step down. That's outside of Krishna consciousness. But it's a step on the way. So all right, then if you at least be detached instead of like being totally attached to the world. But that's of course not an option for us. No. We are, this verse, we are not gonna take advantage of this clause. Say, forget it, you know. Then you're going off in the woods. You're going on a detour, right? And you are postponing reaching the destination. So that's for us not an option. That's where it stops, really. Krishna has to remain in our in the center of our activities. And then knowledge is better than practice. Okay. Meditation better than knowledge. Yeah, okay. Chant Hare Krishna. Then? Not chanting. She's not very surrendered, is she? So, in this way, the Bhagavad Gita is giving us these levels: karma, jnana, and bhakti. And then you get karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. So I was yesterday touching upon the point, and today I thought I'll elaborate a little more. It's the senses. The senses are very strong. They've never been controlled. So then engage them through work. Then engage them through work in Krishna service. So not that we sit there and just bite a piece of wood and start trying to control the mind, you know, and the mind is connected to the senses, and the senses are pressurizing the mind. Just, no, I have to control myself. I cannot fall prey to these lower activities because I'll get entangled in bad karma. No, 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 I will not do it. That is not possible. It's not possible. So therefore, when for most of us, we have to work for Krishna, because we have restless, agitated senses. The senses want to enjoy. Therefore, we understand that for us, meditation is not really going to work. As long as the senses are so attached to enjoyment, then we should engage them in the service of Krishna. And then by making that sacrifice for Krishna, we'll enjoy in that way. But knowledge is required, so that we have a purpose. No knowledge, no purpose. Why am I doing all this? Therefore, we hear, but we need to stay in contact with the Gita. So it's like, oh God, you know, I've never been a reader in my life. I mean, it's just not my thing, you know, reading, you know, like, oh God, reading. No. It's like, our movement is not very good at that, you know, at like a culture of reading. You know? And if we read, then it's Facebook or something quick. an SMS, 4 lines, that's manageable. Yeah, something very short. But no, reading. We have to read. Reading is a good thing. Yes. Yeah, but people are too lazy to read. Yeah. And then Bhagavad Gita. Because there are many very deep points there. And by reading it again and again, gradually, it will penetrate into our consciousness. So, therefore it is said, knowledge is better than practice, meditation is better than knowledge. When we become absorbed in that knowledge, that's better than just, okay, you know, figuring it out. No. It has to take over our consciousness. It's about absorption. And that's what happens, see, when we regularly hear transcendental things, then that transcendental knowledge will just surface. Yeah? It just surfaces in our thoughts. The stream of thoughts is just going on and on. But it's not just randomly going on. It is echoing the things that we have been absorbing. And of course, it is centered on our desires. But many thoughts are echoing things we have seen, things we have heard. They're echoing in our minds. So sometimes people say, but, you know, whenever I read, I just forget it. I forget it the next moment. I read and the next moment I already forgot it. Don't worry about it. Just keep on reading. It's okay, you know. Don't punish yourself. You know, I'm so bad. You know, I forget everything. You know, it's so terrible. And have no bhakti. Stop beating. It's all right. Don't worry about it. It will work in the consciousness. It will emerge. Just when you're in the middle of the supermarket, suddenly, you know, like a fragment of the Bhagavad Gita comes up in your head for some reason. It's little by little. And with time, our thoughts become purified. It just automatically more thoughts of Krishna, just by hearing of Krishna. So this is actually how association with the Bhagavad Gita is very helpful. So we are trying to be absorbed in Krishna. Absorbed. And then different levels of absorption, obviously. Love for Krishna is the highest. And then it can come down, you know, to where you just, you know, just try and be a little detached. Yeah. So, the Bhagavad Gita is giving a giving different ways. And in this part of the 12th chapter, the focus was on us, on our consciousness, on how we can approach Krishna and what we should do. And the second half of the 12th chapter is dealing with like how Krishna is responding, because it's not, that is the nature of devotional service. It's not us alone. It's Krishna also relating to us. So the chapter is describing devotional service, and it's interesting that it's divided in two halves. One half is describing about us and how we can be approach Krishna in the right mood, and the next thing it is just saying, who is dear to the Lord? Yeah. So that's like, describing Krishna's perspective. One who bears no hatred, who is a compassionate friend to all creatures, who is not possessive or selfish, equal in happiness and distress, and forgiving. No hatred, compassionate, not selfish, forgiving. An equal-minded person, someone who is in happiness and distress, equal-minded. So yeah, these are the qualities of a devotee. One who's dedicated to the spiritual path. Yes? That means it's an endeavor. It's not automatic, the spiritual path. Not one who is spiritual. No, the spiritual path. There are many paths. Right? A path is narrow. A path means you have to take a choice. I'm turning this way. So, one who is dedicated to the spiritual path. And then one who is satisfied. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita also that austerity of the mind is to be satisfied. So since when is being satisfied in austerity? But it means to be satisfied when the conditions are right. So when you have a house, you have Krishna in the house, you have your altar, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you have the books, you have basically a Krishna conscious life. And of course the mind is not satisfied. You have to carry him on the head, don't you know? That's what Krishna does when he carries Nanda Maharaj's shoes. So we have to, like that, be satisfied with the spiritual life that we have, and that means it's make a mental adjustment, because the habit is to just not be still, to always want something more. It means to preach to ourselves, to tell ourselves, it's all right now. Now it's actually good. And be satisfied with this. Do not change it. Just now it's right. Krishna is in the center. Good. Now no need to make a change anymore. Mind still wants to make a change out of habit. No. Not required. Be satisfied. Such a person is dear to Krishna. One who troubles no one and is troubled by no one, who is unmoved by happiness, anger, fear, or distress, is dear to me. So, just you can hang it on the wall, right, next to the mirror, and, just meditate on it. Some people do. They have stickers on the mirror, So in the morning when they brush their teeth, they meditate on such verses. We need to do such things, right? to create some meditation. Most devotees are on automatic pilot. Yeah? Sort of, chant 16 rounds, somehow or other, squeeze them in, and then for the rest, on automatic pilot. Yeah? But one has to do more than that. One has to actually start a meditation. In devotional service, we have two initiations. The first initiation is to fix ourselves in the process, to make a proper connection. Yeah. We say, like, at the time of initiation, we are promising to follow four regulated principles, and we receive the mantra from the spiritual master, it says in the scriptures, which we thought we already had it before. So as they received the mantra, it's the thing. Now I'm giving you the mantra. I already got it. It's like, you know, it's your birthday, you know, and someone goes, and I'm going to give you this gift. And they go, I already got it. Get nothing new to give me. Get nothing new to give me. Right? Yeah. No, but actually, before, we were also chanting the mantra, but not in that mood of being a servant of our spiritual master. It's different. Before we chanting the mantra, as a practitioner, and thinking, yes, I'm a servant of Krishna. But when you start to chant the mantra, saying, now I'm a servant of the spiritual master, and I can't take it back, because now I've promised it. I mean, there's no taking back. Then the chanting happens in a different way, and that's the only way one can chant the mantra. Whatever the spiritual master wants, that's it. Yeah. Like that. So that's the first initiation. We are making, situating ourselves properly. But in the second initiation, we have some knowledge, and now we begin to contemplate. The second initiation is the one where is the initiation of absorption. It is the time when we begin our meditation. We receive the Gayatri mantra, and three times a day we're chanting this Gayatri mantra at the joints of the day as a means of meditation. And it doesn't stop there. We are beginning to meditate on the scriptures. That's the idea, that we live with the verses of the scriptures, and they become like, we begin to make an endeavor to adjust our life to it. And in this way, they come to life. In that way, it becomes meaningful. Otherwise, you know, this Bhagavad Gita, it can be verse after verse after verse, and we can just rattle them off, and it's really nice, and we've heard it before, and it's great, and it just, you know, straight off the duck's back. But when we change our life accordingly, then they become more and more a meditation if we start to try. So yeah, this is the idea. So you could say it in a different way. The first initiation is just sort of scouting out the terrain, right? And the second initiation is like really like going in detail, in depth, into it. Yeah, that's it. At first, sort of, okay, these are the parameters. You know? Now I'll stay within these parameters. And then it is like, now I'm going to get an absorption going. And that is really the idea. So these initiations are like handles, you know, like just. I was thinking about vows, and one thing that struck me about vows is that vows are designed to make us act on a platform of behavior that is higher than what would come natural. Right? So it's like a handle by which we pull ourselves up. Right? It's like for old people to get out of the bathtub or something. You know? They need handles everywhere. A handle here, a handle there. Like, pull yourself up. So, the first initiation is the handle where we can sort of get on our feet. And then in the second initiation, yes, then we really like it goes under the surface. It becomes in depth spiritual life. And that is really what we what we want to see. That's why it said the first initiation is not complete. And then people think, oh my God, is it not complete? It doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, did I only get like half? No, it's not complete because our attitude is not complete. In itself, of course it's complete. The holy name is enough in itself. Right? It's enough to take us back to God. I don't need anything more. But it's the first one's not complete because our attitude is not complete. We are not fully situated in the proper approach. Okay, it's getting late, so I'm going to wrap it up in a conclusion. So the conclusion is that the mind should be absorbed in remembering Krishna in person, and at the same time we should be absorbed in serving Krishna with our senses, with our mind, with our words, mind, body and words, like that. And then then it's very nice. Okay, now maybe some feedback from some of you.
You know, you mentioned about second initiation. I was thinking that first initiation, the rules and the boundaries are very clearly defined. But with second initiation, there's nothing that's sort of testing the level of absorption. And so although you may be chanting mantras every day, it's not clear whether absorption is really developing.
Well, you know, one test Srila Prabhupada gave is that we can see that our material desires are decreasing. Right? Our interest in material things will diminish. Yeah? And therefore, absorption means we can spend more time with Krishna. Right? It's not enough. You know, you read like 1 hour and you feel like, I want to read more. It's just not enough. Yeah? You chant 16 rounds and, you know, you just feel like, that's meager. Yeah? That's very meager. It's not from that you're happy when you finish 16 rounds. Absorption means be happy to chant. So we're all lacking some absorption and having some absorption. And some things absorb us more than others. Yeah? So that's. But we must make a conscious endeavor to increase our hearing and chanting about Krishna and our service. That's absorption. And also we should think, what am I going to do for Prabhupada? You see, it's like that used to be everything. Up to, well, in the earlier days of our movement, right, that was everything. What am I going to do for Prabhupada? There was nothing else. That was synonymous with Krishna consciousness. That was synonymous with absorption. What am I going to do for Prabhupada? And then they were doing something. And then it changed over the years, where we say, well, yeah, but I must also situate myself properly. And that is true. Right? So now a lot of focus is on where am I properly situated in service so that I can get the optimal absorption. Where is the best condition for me? I get this question all the time. Right? People want to make choices in their life and they ask me these questions like, should I go to such and such place? Should I do this and this service? should I marry this one or that one? And, you know, should I go and study or should I take a job? Should I live in the temple? Should I live outside? I mean, you know, all the time. You know, it's all about... And then I give them some advice according to their nature, and they said, but of course, you also have to do something for Prabhupada, because it's not only about you and Krishna. It's just simply about... Prabhupada also said, give me this life. So we have to think about that. What are we doing for Prabhupada? It's got to have some substance to it, and with time, more substance. As you're getting more experienced, it should have some substance. So one should... Therefore, absorption also means taking responsibility for Prabhupada. And that's what you see, you know, in... because I have said that before in lectures, that there are different circles in our movement, right? Circles of devotees. The inner circle of devotees, and then more outer circles, right? And then like sort of on the periphery, you know, people on the periphery, they're there, but, and then like there's people on the periphery, they're with this movement, they're part of this movement, but they're not like so seriously involved, but they have their connection, so they're on the outer periphery. Then there are people on the service, on a circle of regular service and regular engagement, and then finally there's the inner circle. And that inner circle, right? I always, like, years ago I was thinking about this, you know, like I want to be part of this inner circle, right? That's where I want to be, in that inner circle. And it's like, of course, I'm not in there, but I've watched now, you know, long enough people that are in the inner circle that I know that they're dedicated to Prabhupada. It's about that, you know. In that inner circle, it's those who are ready to really, like, do something for Prabhupada. And that's how one is judged at the end. Do something, then get back to God. So absorption is very much also in that, you know, doing some service to God.
But I would like to know if there's a specific reason why the Gayatri Mantra is chanting in silence.
Yeah. There is a specific reason why the Gayatri Mantra is chanted internally in the mind, because such meditation on Krishna is not possible for those who are engaged in sinful activity. It's only possible to approach Krishna in more closely if one is purely situated. Therefore, first get purely situated, and then one gets the second initiation, and therefore it is only meant for those who are purely situated. So first one gets first initiation, and then one is tested. Yeah? First initiation is also a test, you know. We give first initiation easily, Prabhupada said. A test to see how much people actually are going to do it. You know, a spiritual master, you take a risk when you give someone first initiation, because it looked good before, but, you know, people are always showing a better side before. Yeah? You know, before they show a better side because they want it, you know, that, like, yeah, they want it because it gives certain recognition, prestige and all that. So they want that initiation. But after they get it, it's the anticlimax, right? Because they didn't suddenly grow wings, you know, as they thought they would or as they had hoped. and still feel like they still have lead boots, you know, and it's still kind of heavy on the spiritual path. So therefore, after the first initiation, we're going to see a percentage of those who are not actually going to take the vow so serious, and they're going to get many, they'll struggle and they'll have difficulties and they'll fall down and this and that, you know, or they don't chant their rounds and this and that. So, you know, from them we keep the Gayatri Mantra secret. We will never tell them. No way. No. Only to those who have proven that they really followed will we tell those secret mantras. Then they can also begin their meditation. And then maybe you get the mantras, and then in the beginning you think, well, is this the big secret? But then after a while you're chanting it, you realize that there's more to the secret than you thought there was. And then you realize, God, it is a big secret after all. Yeah, anyway, but you know, some of us are not so good at these Gayatri mantras. So it has to go hand in hand with being compassionate. Can't chant the Gayatri mantra if you're not compassionate. You know, the opposite of a brahmana is a kripana, a miser. Kripana falahiteva. So a Brahmin is generous. He's known for his generosity. It's a kibu who never eats, don't you know? Eat once a month. In Spain we used to have this pujari. He would just never eat. I never saw him eat once. And then one day, I caught him with some prasadam in a bucket. had a plastic bucket, you know, like a laundry bucket, and at the bottom there was some prasadam. I told you, you are eating.
I was just wondering, when you're teaching to like people, you always have to try and speak to them on their level. So, and like kind of relates to things that they would understand. So like, how do you draw the line between trying to relate to the level that people would understand and giving a mundane interpretation of Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, there's a limit to how much we can adjust to people. Prabhupada would also say that more important than trying to please the people, we have to be sure that we're pleasing Krishna. So we can present things in a way that people can understand, but we can never displease Krishna by compromising the truth. You know what I'm saying? So you can present the truth in different ways, but you cannot water it down. And as soon as you start watering it down, that's where, you know, the actual conclusions changed a little bit. Well, you know, anyway, it's these principles are not so important. Well, you know, you try. No, if you don't follow it, right, then it will not help you. We have to be clear. We can say it in different ways. We don't have to say, and you'll go to hell, but we can say it will not help you. No. We have to be truthful. So we should not change the philosophy. And when we start to water down the philosophy too much, then we become dissatisfied. And there is that story about Vyasadeva in the Bhagavatam, who gave so many different types of yoga and processes and was depressed because he hadn't directly glorified Krishna. Right? So that's an extra warning, you know, like it's just, don't go too indirect. Because if you go too indirect, you'll become depressed. That's the warning in Bhagavatam. So, the art is to tell people everything, but in a way that it sounds quite acceptable. You know, just like, for example, if you say sinful activity, right? Some people have an allergy to the word sin, because they came from some heavy religious background, you know, either whether it's Eastern or Western, you know, like in India, you know, from the moment that you can barely walk, right, the parents go, Jai Karo, Jai Karo, right? Jai Karo, yeah, you have to bow down, Jai Karo. And then, you know, and then they give the kid, they give him give some money and put in the box or give to the Swami, and they really don't want to do that. But the parents push them like anything, right? So you see, like, a lot of people from Indian background have some allergies for these things. And in the same way, Christians, you know, they're often reminded that they'll burn in hell. So they're also allergic to the word sin. So then, instead of sinful activity, I say destructive activity. And when you say destructive activity, oh, everyone agrees. Oh yes, no destructive activity. No, that's not good. Self-destructive, socially destructive, you know. Huh? If you instead of sin say destructive, then it's much easier to accept. So sometimes a word is just makes a world of difference. That's okay. You can change a word, but not the message.